Welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven-figure plus store owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. I'm your host, Andrew Udarian, and today on the show, we're talking about personal assistants. I'm guessing most of us, or a lot of us at least, have experimented with, you know, an assistant of some time. Maybe it's a VA, maybe it's even someone, you know, in your local country that is helping you do stuff and had varying levels of success with that. The promise, you know, it sounds very enticing. Have someone who can take care of all the little minutiae and the details, leaving you free to really focus on the important stuff, right? That's the promise. But too often, it boils down to not working as well as you'd hoped in terms of you having to dive back in and help out with things, you know, that VA just not cutting it, whatever it is. A lot of times the truth is not as good as the promise. And that's why I'm chatting with Marshall Haas today about how he was able to not just get a personal assistant, but kind of the journey he had using multiple personal assistants that did not work and what he finally did that changed, that really unlocked an insane amount of time savings for him. And so we talk about, you know, that process for him and what the key things were in place that made it possible. And so he's also just a really interesting e-commerce entrepreneur in general. We talk about some of his other businesses and some of his great writing. So it's kind of, you know, talk about a few things. So I hope you enjoy it. Today, though, before we jump in, I want to give a big, big thank you to our two sponsors that make the show possible. First, to the team over at Klaviyo, pretty much your personal assistant for email marketing, to use a super cheesy little pun connection there on the episode title. But it really is. You can go in, set up these flows that build relationships, that market to, upsell, cross-sell with your customers automatically, and they're highly customized, which is what makes it so powerful. So our 15,000 customers already using it to grow their e-commerce brands and their businesses, and definitely the most popular email marketing tool among merchants in our private community of seven-figure plus store owners. So make sure to check them out. They also have an event coming up in Boston, September 25th and 26th. You can get $300 off with the coupon code ecommercefuel300, and you can learn more about that conference at ecommercefuel.com/Boston event, or get started for free with Klaviyo at klaviyo.com/ECF. And then secondly, a big thank you to the team over at Liquid Web. If you have a WooCommerce store, if you don't, you still should consider them for hosting because they're rock stars at hosting. But especially if you're, you know, if you're on WooCommerce, pull the car over, stop driving, and go check them out, because I guarantee you their offering exclusively designed for WooCommerce is going to speed up your store, make your life easier as a system admin, or make your system admin's life way easier, and make sure your store is ready and rocking to go and scalable if and when you get that, you know, huge burst of traffic so you can capitalize on it when it counts. So they've built a platform all the way from the ground up to make your WooCommerce store just supercharged. And you can learn more about it, get started, and check them out at ecommercefuel.com/liquidweb. All right, let's talk about how to save a ton of time by hiring and incorporating a personal assistant into your life. You had a great post we'll link up to in the show notes about hiring a personal assistant and someone who could help out with things, take a lot of kind of just personal work off your plate, special projects, things like that. And I think a lot of people listening have probably tried that and struggled with that, especially on the VA front. You went down that route, and ultimately you ended up talking about the assistant that you got to change. Really, it was hugely instrumental in freeing up, you know, I don't know, 60 hours, or maybe even a week. I can't remember exactly how much time it saved you, but made a massive impact on your ability to be productive and free up your time. Maybe we can start on that journey. What did you do first? What did you try that failed? Like, what things did you do that just didn't pan out before you found something that worked?
Yeah, it's been like a constant curiosity of like, you know, the idea of being more efficient. Could I delegate some of these things I really don't want to do that aren't enough to hire like a full-time employee for one singular task? So, I mean, it's just been over the years. So I've tried, you know, these text message assistant services like Magic, and there's one called Operator. We also tried to build one that I mentioned earlier. So I did a lot of that. And that's like, I honestly don't think, I mean, and it's good, these just like single one-off stuff, but the heavy lifting for me is like, hey, pay this electric bill or this random bill that I just got, or hey, you know, call my doctor and make an appointment or run this entire project for me as just like a one-off thing, like run point on that. So definitely tried various like virtual assistants overseas back when we were much smaller and had less money to kind of throw at problems. And it's useful, but the breakdown in communication with, you know, maybe it not being someone's first language, or really what I'm getting at is the ultimate thing there was just access is super important and makes everything that much more efficient. So why it finally worked for me was I hired someone that I felt comfortable with giving just like deep access to a lot of personal information for me that I didn't in the past feel comfortable with.
Sorry to interrupt you right there, but what things? So what things didn't you feel comfortable giving, you know, to maybe overseas staff VAs that you started giving, or maybe you still gave it to those people? But what kind of things are we talking about? Are we talking about like social security numbers? Are we talking like banking information? Like what do you share?
Yeah, so I still draw a line on some things. Like they don't have access to everything, but yeah, I mean credit cards, banking information, medical records, just like really intimate personal stuff, you know, they have a sense on, you know, if you have a medical issue, if you're calling certain doctor XYZ, like you need to trust that person. So preferences, you know, information around family members, and then just like being in on certain meetings in the first place. So hiring someone where like, I feel like this is a badass person that like I would be proud to have in on this meeting that's, you know, really going to help contribute and drive things forward. So really going high end is when things really worked for me. And yeah, like it's the classic case of, I don't know if you've ever hired like, let's say a developer where maybe you can get someone for $50 an hour, or you can get another developer for like $200 an hour. There is definitely a scenario where it's more affordable to hire the more expensive developer because they will build the thing in a shorter amount of time, where let's say it takes them 2 and the other guy takes them, you know, 20 hours. And so you net out to be it being cheaper with the more expensive one just because they're, you know, more efficient. So I found that idea to be true in working with like a higher end assistant.
So who did you end up hiring and how much do you pay them?
Yeah, so I went through a service called Worldwide 101, and I think they actually just changed their name to Boldly. I think it's just boldy.com. And so they, technically, my assistant is an employee of their company, and then we just pay them on an hourly basis. They have like a few different plan tiers. So I think we're paying $37 an hour. Her name's Corinne for Corinne's time. And I think we have for 3 hours a day right now. And so, yeah, that's where we get the saving 60 hours a month of my time.
So hiring someone US-based or Western-based, or where's Corinne based out of?
Yep. Yeah, US-based. They have, it's kind of your preference. So that's the other thing that's interesting about this company is they do a bit of matchmaking. So there was like an hour-long interview where they really got to understand, you know, what I do for a living, the things that I think I might want to delegate to them, and that of course can change over time. And so then they pair with you with someone on their team that they feel like has some good relevant experience. So Corinne had previous experience. I mean, she worked in like Manhattan for CEOs working in the city. Like she's just super, super competent. And then the stuff that she was doing had a lot of parallels with what we do. So yeah, I mean, if you're based in Europe, like they also have some European-based assistants as well. So it's up to preference.
How much do you have to settle? I can't remember who said this once, but I met with Seth Godin, who said something along the lines of, you can either, you know, have everything done exactly how you want it, or you can delegate and not have it done exactly done, but actually free up your time. And I always think, I don't know, one thing that I always find hard to delegate is booking airline tickets, because I feel like, oh, this will only take like 10 or 15 minutes. And if I do it, you know, I know exactly my schedule and when I want to leave and what time that day is great for me to arrive at the airport. And I'm going to optimize for like a combination of price and layovers and things. And there's all, you know, there's probably half a dozen little sub things you think about when you book an airline ticket. But at the same time, if you're booking your airline ticket, it's really hard to grow. That's probably not the best use of your time if you're ambitious and trying to grow and do other things. So how much throughout the process of you bringing on a personal assistant and even one that's really capable, like the one you've described, how much of the success there is just getting really comfortable saying, you know what, I'm not going to get to 99% of what it would be with, or 100% of what it would be if I did it. I'm okay. I'm comfortable with 75%. I'm okay with the occasional suboptimal layover. Has that been a part of the process for you?
Yeah, for sure. There's a bit of letting go on certain things. There's a bit of just like, oh, maybe there's a likelihood that I'm maybe overpaying for this. If I was booking it, I maybe would have, chosen to be, take a layover and save $100, where, when you give someone just kind of blanket rules of just get me there under a certain amount of money to answer your question, yes. Like, it's still imperfect. Like, I still, certain airline tickets, for example, I'll still book. However, maybe I've had Corinne do kind of like the legwork on what's the range to go here from using this points partner or just booking it directly. Give me a few options and then I go in and ultimately make the final decision, but just that like quick first glance she'll do. So that blog post, I definitely don't want people to think I've got it all figured out and with the assistant front and life's great and I just sit back and everything's done for me and I'm just focused on all these perfectly high level decisions. Like, it's still a decision on, does this make sense to delegate? Should I just do this? And I think it changes week to week. Like, if I'm more freed up, I may take on some of those tasks myself that I enjoy. And other times if I'm just swamped, just like, make this go away from me. Like, can you just handle this? And just, I trust your judgment. And then I just know, hey, maybe it's not perfect, but it's taken care of.
What are a few of the things that, as you've had an assistant that's been really, really capable, what are some of the things that she's taking on that you would not have guessed before you found someone so qualified? Like, what are some things, looking back, you're like, wow, that's so awesome. I don't have to do this anymore. I never would have thought I could have her doing this.
So she ran point recently on like basically the entire project for getting onto a new sales channel for us, from figuring out all the logistics stuff that would be required of us, just like essentially a high level project management person. So that was awesome to just like, I had to just kind of be the decision maker on a few things, but those were presented to me, here's the pros and cons of this route, that route, what do you think? So that was quite awesome to be able to take on this whole project, but then have someone else run point on it, which that was really, really nice. I also recently sold a condo that I had that I was using for a rental property. And I basically looped her in from the get-go with the realtor and the title company and the guy I was going to use for all the different maintenance stuff. And there was just like all these little things that had to get handled that she completely ran point on. So more or less, she kind of coordinated the entire sale of the property, which was super, super useful, especially in that time. I was really busy with something else. So yeah, it's definitely been nice.
Marshall, you were writing in your blog post, and I quote, "We had an office in downtown St. Louis filled with fun yet completely unnecessary touches," unquote. Paint us a picture, if you would. Like, what did your office look like that you had before you decided to kind of start, cutting things down?
We bought the building that we rented our first office in, which that's a whole other story, that the opportunity came on our lap. And then there was another larger space on another floor that was vacant. We're like, let's just take that because why not? So it was, I think, 2,800 square feet, something like that. We painted everything white, it's raw brick, things like that. And then we painted the floor black. So it was very much just like this black and white theme. Had, I think, two or three private offices, kitchen area, and then like a big, big open area with, it was on the corner of the building. So there was windows on three of the four sides. So lots of natural light. And then maybe the most interesting side of it was we had a conference room that we then, most of everything was white, but then we painted the conference room inside all black, like floor, ceiling, everything, all the furniture, conference table was all black. And then we had a, because why not? We bought a neon sign. Oh, what did it say? I think it just said
the black box.
Yeah. So it was just like, that's cool. You know, one of those things. It was just one of those things where like the classic case of you fill the space you give yourself.
Yeah, like really trend, just really high-end trendy stuff, like almost Silicon Valley vibe, high-end office.
Exactly. Like it was frivolous is the correct word. we were swimming in space. We definitely didn't have enough people to fill the whole thing. So it's like, you want to work in that corner today? Cool, work in that corner. Like, it, yeah.
What was your team? Maybe give a sense of how many people were in there. And then maybe also, maybe more importantly, were you fulfilling out of this place too? Or were you using a 3PL at the time as well? And it was just your office space?
Yeah, purely just office space. We had a 3PL at that point. So at like peak headcount, 7 or 8 people out of that office. And then a couple people were remote as well.
Okay. So maybe we're going to dive into all the, you know, a little bit of the journey from going, as in your words, not mine, the frivolous office down to the remote team. But give us, if you would, before and after, what was your monthly overhead when you had the warehouse or the offices rather, and then after, what did your team look like before and after, and then what did it do to profitability before and after? So kind of three metrics, overhead, team, and profitability, let's say right before you made the decision, then let's say maybe a year after the fact.
Yeah. So without getting into like exact numbers, overall cost dropped about, I looked at it before we got on, dropped about 40 to 50%. And this isn't purely from just going from having an office to not. All of this happened in the same time when I decided to cut a lot of costs and we kind of changed our model and focus as a company. Basically, Need Want was started off as more of like a studio, built a lot of different brands and products, put a lot of, you know, threw stuff against the wall. And we had a lot of staff and resources for that model, you know, supporting just kind of like the ideation and building out early stuff. We had made a decision that took, you know, about a year to kind of see through of just like selling off everything but our top two. And then that ultimately became our top one product and just got rid of everything else. So we let go, and the only company that we're operating now, pretty much other than some investments, is Peel. So we sold off or shut down everything else that we had going. So with that, a little bit of staff either moved over to the acquirers or just didn't make sense. And unfortunately, I had to let them go. So it was that plus going remote where a lot of costs were nixed. But at least in the office, I can directly tie that to like $4,000 to $5,000 in direct expenses, and then there's definitely some indirect stuff.
Yeah, $4,000 to $5,000 per month.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Maybe we could talk quickly about your portfolio. I mentioned it at the top, but Peel, of course, is the super thin iPhone case that you have and still have. You've got a linen bedding company called Primary, or did Minimums. Loved. We'll talk a little bit more about Minimums. I loved that. That was the thing actually that caused me to reach out to you. Kind of explained Minimums at the top, but really cool brand. Mod Notebooks and the Mask Company. So all those other ones except for Peel, you either sold off or shut down?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So Emoji Masks, we sold. That was the smallest kind of sale. It's just like a start off as a side project. Mod Notebooks, sold that. Minimums, it's just kind of there and inactive. So we didn't sell it. It's currently not shut down. It's just there, but not being actively developed. The one non-e-commerce thing that we did was called Second, and it was essentially a text message assistant that it was kind of a blended joint venture sale structure where someone else took it over and we just hung on to equity. But I believe they actually shut it down later on. And then we just had Peel and Primary Goods. And about another year later, after selling the other ones, we decided it made sense just to double down on Peel and found someone to acquire Primary Goods. So we still own a small chunk of that company, but yeah, just focused on Peel these days. So like you said, that started off as the original super thin iPhone case. And then we've expanded to other devices and Android and Pixel and all that. Now we're expanding that to more of a minimalist essentials brand, doing more accessories. And then I think you'll see us do more everyday carry type products as well. So yeah, that was kind of the portfolio.
So what was it? I mean, was it why? What was the kind of idea in your head behind selling? You know, really focusing down, going remote. What were you driving toward with all of these things? Was it driven by wanting to have a distributed team and kind of, you know, the portfolio side of the business and focusing made more sense there? What were you thinking during this whole process? You changed a lot in about, a short period of time.
Yeah. So I think the initial side was just focus. You know, we were a small team. We were at one point juggling like four brands, you know, so what that looks like is, you know, we do a little bit on this one, launch it, and then focus on another one. And then, you know, launch some new feature or product or something. But, you know, in that, the last one hasn't been touched for 6 months, 12 months, you know, whatever. So it's just like things weren't getting the love they deserved. And then you have this other company that's doing really well and another one that's kind of stagnating or declining, where you just kind of look at the spread of resources and, you know, it's just kind of questioning like, could we be doing better if we just focused? You know, it was super fun to launch a lot of different stuff, but then we got to a point where, you know, you're just trying to grow a business. Yeah. So that's where it came from. And then going remote and also kind of nixing some expenses honestly came from, I can honestly tie it to reading a book called Profit First. I think it's by Mike Michalowicz.
Yeah, it's a real popular book in our community. People, a lot of listeners, though, will know it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it just totally resonated with me. Like, we had been just pouring every incoming dollar back into growth. And my co-founder and I hadn't seen a ton out of the business yet. And it was just like a frustration with that. It was like, it was just that point of like, when, you know, when are we going to take some of these profits for ourselves, or, you know, slow down, or like, you know, at what point does it happen? Yeah. So, I mean, it was a mix of focus and wanting to see some income for ourselves. And then, I mean, honestly, it's also probably a lifestyle thing. Like, when you build a company, like you basically get to create your own little mini world in a way. And I wanted to not have to worry about coming to an office, and had been considering doing the nomad thing with my wife once she had finished school. So it was a lot of different factors, but yeah, I would say those were the top few.
On the remote side, I just got done doing an onboard training with a new hire who is remote, and almost all of my work with team members in the past has been remote. And he came in for, you know, 3 or 4 days in person. We hung out a bunch. We did a lot of training, and the speed with which we were able to both connect, get to know each other, build rapport, and also just cover training and strategize, it felt like it was 5x what I've been able to previously do with new hires when it wasn't in person. So do you feel when you, and you've got this interesting kind of little experiment, or at least a comparison you can make from, you had a team that was in the office and being able to work together on a daily basis. You've got a team, even not exactly the same team, but I'm guessing there's a lot of crossover left still, and you're all remote. Like, how can you compare, how does the efficiency compare? Do you see a big hit in efficiency, a small hit? Is it worth it? Like, what are your thoughts looking between those two now that it's been a little while and making the comparison? Do you miss having that human connection? And has it been a good trade?
Yeah. I mean, I think to start off, I would definitely admit there's a trade-off there. I agree with, there is probably in some ways you lose some efficiency. There's a lot of value in just like face-to-face. I mean, I can point to like manufacturing stuff and trying to do that over email, and then just taking a trip to China and you bang out 5 weeks of back and forth in 3 days, you know, that. So I totally see that. I think for me, the trade-off has definitely been worth it. I don't have a one-to-one comparison though, because we, from the start of the company, have always been open to hiring remote employees. So there were always guys in the team that were, you know, stayed over or working in a different country where not everyone was in the office. It was always a blend. So because that's where we started from, in a lot of ways, I would say we're more efficient now because things aren't broken up between two different, you know, communication channels of in person for some people and then in Basecamp or Slack for others, where we would just constantly get this drop off of some sort of discussion would happen in person and then, okay, we're going forward with it. And then, you know, somebody who's working remotely at that point, just like, wait, what happened? Like, what are we doing? Why? So now that everything just has to live online and, you know, whatever project management tools we use in those discussion channels, it's been more efficient in that regard.
Interesting. I kind of going off of that theme, I'm in the middle of trying to build out a better water cooler kind of, we use Asana for all of our project management. We've got some other systems we use for different things, but having some kind of central place for ad hoc fun communication of a shorter nature that's not email. You have some interesting thoughts on that, both on how you kind of think about communication with your team, and then also maybe we can talk about that. One thing you mentioned in one of your posts is the importance of thoughtful replies and emphasizing asynchronous communication. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a universal problem or issue that people struggle with, you know, across working in a company today. And so, I mean, we're definitely not perfect, but I think just giving yourself some space to mull something over is definitely really important. Like we used to be on Slack, now we're on Basecamp. I don't, you know, we could go back to Slack someday and try to work around this, but I found that just turning off Basecamp for like a few hours throughout the day when I just really need to focus on something where I just don't have these inbound notifications constantly, like, does wonders for your productivity. And then, you know, I can hop on later and answer someone's question or at least see what they said and then think about it for a day and get back to them. Where, you know, yeah, that's slowed down kind of the feedback loop or communication loop, but I feel like that quality of response and thinking and mulling over a problem is often more important than just raw speed. So yeah, and then I mean on the water cooler side of things, definitely not perfect, but we've set up just some kind of automated prompts. Basecamp has a tool where you can just kind of set up these questions on whatever schedule you want. So we have, I think on Monday, you know, we ask people what we're up to over the weekend. Periodically, there's one about, you know, are you reading anything interesting that, you know, it's just a prompt to share any book recommendations or blog articles or anything like that. And then I think another one is like, were you inspired by anything lately? And that's just, that one doesn't get replied to a ton. Like not every single prompt gets an answer, but it reminds me of like, oh, this is this really cool product I saw the other day. Or like, I really loved how brand X positioned something, or, you know, it's just those are the water cooler conversations that happen of like, you know, what'd you get up to this weekend, Phil? And, oh, I went here with my wife and like, oh, okay, I've been there. And then, you know, it's the prompt that opens those discussions where you get to know your colleagues.
And so, Basecamp will let you automatically put those in and it'll save prompts that fire off to your team in chat on a regular basis. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, you could argue, you know, is that not as like organic and natural? Sure. But I just care about the answers and like the discussion happening, like how it gets asked in the first place. Maybe not perfect, but yeah, it gets some interesting conversations flowing, which is what I ultimately care about.
And do you have, it seems like you have a, maybe not a rule, but kind of a habit across the team of everyone kind of checking in the morning and just saying hi, like kind of a morning greet in Basecamp to kind of kick off the day?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely not a rule or anything. It's just been our thing. Everybody just kind of, you know, morning, you know, coffee emoji, whatever. Just kind of, I think it's the underlying thing is like, I'm here working now. And this is not a requirement by any means. It just kind of lets everybody know, like, I'm around now, like if you need anything. And, you know, sometimes our just general chat is just looks like, you know, I look at yesterday and it says, we all said good morning and nothing happened between then. And then today it's just a bunch of good mornings and, you know, hey, what's up kind of things. But yeah, I think it's just like the natural, like, you know, I'm in the office now, I'm around, what's up kind of prompt.
Getting close to wrapping up, but one thing I have to touch on before we do is, and we mentioned it in the episode already at the top, but minimums. Got to compliment you, man. I love that site. And I know it's not something that you're probably, you know, actively investing in now, but it's the kind of site where there's probably half a dozen sites online where even if nobody mentions them, even if I don't get an email every now and then, I just think, what's going on at that site? I wonder if there's a new post. And I would check, you know, head over there. And I'm a big fan of having few things, having good quality things. And so anyway, the photography there, for people, I mentioned it briefly at the top, but again, if you're not familiar with it, it's just the most interesting things of the most interesting people. I'm probably butchering your tagline, but that's more or less it. And just great photography, interesting people, and they share their, you know, half a dozen to a dozen most interesting possessions. And I always, it's just well done. The photography is great and the concept's great. And yeah, if you haven't checked it out, is it still at minimums.com? Is that the right, the website?
Yep, that's right.
Just out of curiosity, what was the cost of doing one shot? You have one person come on. For example, I think Eric Banholtz, he's a friend, ECF member, and I think he was on minimums. You know, how did you, total personal curiosity, we're probably going to lose 90% of listeners here, but did you fly a photographer out there? Because the photography was always so high quality. Did you work with somebody locally on the ground and pay them, and you just kind of coordinated it that way? How did that all work?
Yeah, so we would find someone locally for each of those shoots. So yeah, each interview, like it's all just mostly photography driven. They tell us, you know, a few of their items that are kind of their most cherished, and then we would photograph that person in their space and then them with those items. So yeah, it was a lot of finding, you know, if someone's in LA, we'd have a couple of great people that we knew already to do that. But if it was more difficult when we, you know, had someone based somewhere else that we just didn't know anybody yet. So we'd have to go out and call through Craigslist and Instagram and just, you know, whatever means we could find to find a good photographer there. So I think on average, it probably cost us like $200 for the photography. And then the rest was just time of coordinating and scheduling and reaching out to people and putting the posts together. So I think we at the peak, we were doing one per week. So, you know, four or so per month. So about $1,000 in just like true cost plus time to coordinate. So yeah, I mean, I appreciate the kind words. I didn't know you're a fan of it. It was one of those things where like, I'm sad it didn't pan out. The model just didn't work. Like it was all going to be affiliate based people, you know, reading these interviews. Not everything someone would choose as their most prized possessions was things that we could link to or that were even for sale. You know, it was like, oh, grandpap's, you know, rifle that's been in the family for 30 years. Like there was no affiliate link for that product, you know? So it was tough to monetize it. And we definitely didn't want to influence what people chose, you know, like, hey, maybe choose this other one that has a great affiliate partnership. Like we just didn't want to play that game. It was hard to monetize, is why the model didn't work. And yeah, just couldn't make it profitable to cover those expenses. And I think we did it for maybe about a year. So one of those things that was really fun to run, but we also have a great domain now that I have some ideas for that maybe we'll use for something new down the road. But yeah, unfortunately, no longer developing minimums.
Well, it's super cool. Even without the new stuff, I get lost on there going back and reading for, you know, huge hits to my productivity throughout certain weeks. So thank you for that. Check it out, minimums.com. And the other thing was you're blogging now at marshallhaas.com. And that's the reason why Minimums was the reason that originally I kind of became familiar with your brand and not you as much, but then I you know, because you're not, you know, front and center on that Minimums website, and then came across marshallhaas.com and realized, oh, this is the Minimums guy, and you had a bunch of great content, a couple of which we've used to, you know, on this episode, your article about, you know, closing down the warehouse and the remote team, and then of course on the personal assistant side. So great stuff over there. You got a newsletter people should check out, and you're doing something interesting with how you're picking content. Can you talk about that? Like I think it's a pretty, from a content marketer perspective, an interesting way to decide on what, you know, what to spend time writing about. Can you describe that?
Sure. You know, I had the idea of like, all right, I'm going to start a personal blog, kind of continue the type of blog posts that we used to write on the Need Want blog. But yeah, I mean, I have all these ideas for articles that I could do. It's just like, which one should I write next? Like I could just start picking away and in no particular order, just whatever speaks to me. But I decided, why not just ask people that come to the site? So there's this whole section. I think it's just like, what's next is the link in the header. And it's a list of hypothetical blog post titles and, you know, subject to change once I write them, but they're all very descriptive titles and it gives you a sense on what they're about. And so if you click through, you can then vote on that particular one. So I essentially have this flow where if you sign up for the newsletter that way, you're then prompted with a thing I set up on Typeform where you can just choose any of the articles that I have in the queue that you're most interested in. And then I can go in there and see then, you know, what's the most voted for. So I've started to kind of pick away at them. Some were like the most voted for, others I just really wanted to vote, or sorry, I really wanted to write, but it definitely helps dictate what I'll do next. Like, oh, okay, this one, it's just not resonating with people and this other one is, so I'll write that. The other side effect of it is you start a new blog. The benefit of it, I think, is you start a new blog, you maybe hit launch with one or two, three articles, but you don't have a sense on what someone could write about unless you just check their kind of their bio. I found this gives people a good sense of like what my history is and my experience, and made the blog feel a bit more, it had more meat to it without it being there yet and a lot of people to choose what I should write next. So kind of a two-pronged reason to do it. And it's been fun. Yeah, I figured I would try it and see if it worked.
Yeah, it's great. If you like e-commerce, design, manufacturing, travel, or productivity, it's kind of a mix-up of all those, MarshallHaas.com. Highly recommend it. Marshall, got to wrap up soon, but are you up for doing a quick lightning round, just super fast, one-word, one-sentence answers on half a dozen or so random questions?
Sure. Sounds fun.
Awesome. What's something you've changed your mind about recently?
Oh, no. Waking up early. I'll keep these short. Waking up early.
Waking up early. To sleep in or actually to wake up early?
To wake up early. So I always was someone that was a night owl, working till, 3 a.m., things like that. I just always thought I wouldn't get value from being one of these early risers, hitting my work early in the morning. I would definitely be someone that my most productive hours were, midnight to 3 a.m. kind of thing. And I changed my mind on that. And I really have seen the benefit of waking up early at 5 or 6 a.m. and getting to it by, 8 a.m. and having that quiet period in the morning. So yeah, it's been nice.
Do you think Amazon should be broken up by the government?
I was just debating this with a friend the other day. I don't know the answer, but potentially yes. I think there is some anti-competition things going on their platform for e-commerce entrepreneurs like ourselves. So yeah, I won't claim to have the answer on like the economic, side effects of breaking them up, but I think potentially, yeah, there's a case to be made for that.
What, as the man who is behind minimums and have yet, you might be on there, I didn't see it. What's your favorite physical object that you own?
A really nice designer chair that I have. It's like a good lounge chair for reading a book. Yeah, that's probably my favorite possession.
And I'm going to kind of spring this on you, but from all of the other possessions that people have had on minimums, doesn't have to be the most, but what's one of the top possessions where you're like, oh, man, I think it's sweet. Wish I that you were most covetous of. Let's put it that way.
I'm not sure I can think of anything off the top that was like the top, like, oh, I just lust after that. But one of the most useful things that I learned about through that was just a Swell water bottle. I had never heard of them until we interviewed someone. And I even forget who it was, but we all ordered one after reading what they had to say about it and have loved one of those things ever since. So yeah, very simple, but a Swell water bottle.
Cool. What's the maximum number of days you feel comfortable wearing a pair of jeans without washing them? No judgment. People won't judge you here. Anything you want. 6 months, yeah. With a very understanding audience.
Wow. Someone said 6 months before. Okay. I don't feel bad then.
We've had forever. You never washed them. With one I had yesterday.
I will say, someone once told me if you put a pair of jeans in the freezer, that like it kills a lot of the buildup of germs. And I tried it and I felt better about wearing the jeans. So I could get behind forever with the caveat of using the freezer every couple months, but I typically wash mine every like 3 weeks or so.
Nice. And then finally, what's one of the top three items on your bucket list, something you want to do before you die?
I still really want to go to Japan. We were about to go before we decided to head home early from the nomad thing. So it'll still happen. But that's just been one of those places since I was a little kid. First, it was video games and tech, and then it was anime, and then it was Japanese cars. So a lot of different reasons that I think Japan is just so cool.
Awesome. Well, Marshall, been fun talking to you on a whole range of topics. If you're listening again, minimums.com is the website we're talking about, in his new blog where he's written about all sorts of cool stuff. MarshallHaas.com. That's MarshallHaas.com. Link up to some of the blog posts that he wrote in the show notes here of particular interest and that kind of spawned the discussion. And Marshall, really appreciate you taking the time to come chat, man. This has been fun.
Yeah, it was fun to have a conversation. So thanks for having me, Andrew.
That's going to do it for this week, but a few important things to know about, especially if you're a store owner, before you go. First, if you're looking to hire for your e-commerce business, make sure to check out the e-commerce fuel job boards. We'll get your job in front of thousands of qualified job seekers to find you the perfect candidate. And if you're looking for work, you should check out the dozens of hand-picked opportunities along with lots of other roles that pop up every week at ecommercefuel.com/jobs. And if you're an established store owner, you absolutely should be a member of our private community for 7-figure plus store owners. You get access to a discussion forum with over 1,000 vetted, experienced e-commerce entrepreneurs, invitations to our in-person member-only events, and access to our private review directory with over 5,000 software and service provider reviews. That sounds interesting. You can learn more and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com/form. That's F-O-R-U-M. And a big, big thank you to the two sponsors who make this show possible. First, to Klaviyo, who makes email marketing automation incredibly easy and powerful. If you're not using them for your store, you're leaving money on the table. You can get started for free at ecommercefuel.com/Klaviyo. And then secondly, to Liquid Web, the absolute best place to host your WooCommerce store anywhere online. If you want a rock solid store that can scale with you when you need it to, check them out at ecommercefuel.com/Liquid Web. Thanks so much for listening, and looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network, live from New York.